Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. Got another jam-packed show for you today, as is tend to happen during earnings season. A bunch of earnings stocks to discuss on the docket. We got Yahoo and IBM yesterday, also Interactive Brokers this morning, Morgan Stanley, USB, BlackRock, Abbott Labs. So we're going to try to get as many of those as we can. We also have two guests for you on the docket. Dave Akuda is going to stop by at 8:15. He's the CEO of Mainstay Capital Management. He's going to give us his outlook on the markets. And then at 8:35, we're going to be joined by Paul Yuk, one of our favorite biotech guys. He's the co-founder of LifeSci Index Partners and the portfolio manager of the BioShares ETFs, tickers BBC and BBP. Joel, how's it going today?
It's going well. We have the S&P futures trading up 7.25 points here, right near the high of the session, 2345. Should recognize the last 2 days' highs are right here, 2346 and 47. So big levels to get through on the upside. Crude flat at 5241. Gold down nearly $10 at 1282.30. And also silver. We have silver in the red by 6 cents as well.
So let's get right into it then. We got a lot. I guess where do you want to start? Because we got a lot of earnings stocks to discuss. I guess the big one yesterday was IBM. Maybe we should start there. IBM reported yesterday Q1 adjusted EPS of $2.38 versus $2.35. They beat that estimate by 3 cents there. Sales 18.2 versus $18.4 billion. Missed that one slightly. They do see their fiscal year adjusted EPS at least $13.80 versus a $14.12 estimate.
I guess I'm not on the show today because nobody's introduced me here, Spencer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I'm like, I'll just sit back here, relax, let you guys run the
show. I'm sorry, Dennis.
And
Dennis is also here.
I'm here. Also here. And, oh, yeah. And I'm looking at IBM. Okay. I'm looking at IBM trade down 8 points here in the pre-market. So I know there's a little echo. Let us know if that echo is still there. They're trying to fix that on the Benzinga end there. Hopefully it's not an issue. Joel is actually trading remote here today, so that might be an issue there as well. So Joel, just make sure you don't have it run in the background. Let's jump into the IBM earnings. 4.85% is down here in the pre-market, getting the beats here. And here's a stock that's starting to get not loved so much by the street anymore. I mean, you know, if you look here and just look at, you know, 2016, it was a fantastic year for IBM. It went from 120 all the way up to 180. But 2017 hasn't been nearly as kind. Now we're down here at 161 here, Joel. Technically speaking, what are you thinking on IBM?
Not getting much of a bounce here in IBM at all. Let's just look at the pre-market low. Pre-market low was at 160.75. Now we're a buck off that level. It just seems like buyers may be emerging. I'll be keeping an eye on that pre-market low, as well as a nice round number like 160. And also I can give you a monthly level there. Besides the 160, back at 158.30, that was your low back in December. But I don't know if you were short this thing, you've been holding on for a while. What better opportunity are you going to get to cover here than a bad earnings report? Don't expect it to go anywhere to fill the gap from yesterday. You got a long ways to do that. But let's see what happens at 160.
Still 3.4% dividend on it, so you do have value investors that start to lick their chops when this thing pulls down. I had this in my investment portfolio at one time, and you know the reason that I sold it was just, you know, it's like old school tech, and they just don't have the growth anymore. And sure, you know, it seems cheap, and, you know, kind of fix my, you know, thing of a value stock, but I don't know. I just don't have a love for it as I did before. So I'm not sure if other value managers think the same thing or not. But, you know, I kind of run my own value fund, obviously just my own capital there. But I don't know. I don't know why I don't have IBM in there. And, you know, I look at it here down 8 points, and I'm not even wanting to get into it. So I think maybe it was just the turnoff from 2015 when the stock went from 200 down to 120 and everybody hated it. And then 2016 was like the relief year for it. But they were buying, you know, a lot of different stocks in 2016. And I don't know. There's a lot of overhead supply up above 180, 190, 200s. And started to get up to 180s. That's why I sold it. I was actually early. I sold around 170, but I don't know. It's down 9 points here, but I'm not jumping in.
Well, is Warren still fully in this?
I think so, yeah. And he's averaged in. I actually heard him talking about it on CNBC. So this is coming from CNBC. They were saying he was averaging over 170. So he's taking a little bit of heat on IBM. So Warren, this fits his description. And usually I follow Warren. Usually when Warren's buying, I'm buying, but I don't know. I just, you know, IBM needs to figure it out. You know, they're still not really a growth company at all anymore. And it's kind of like value tech. And there's a lot of value tech out there. I mean, you can look to Intel's, you can look to the Microsoft's, you know, there's a lot of different value tech. I'm not sure IBM's the one I want. Jumping over here to the other earnings report from last night was Yahoo, Y-H-O-O, and this stock is trading flat here. And one thing to consider, and I was saying this to a couple traders before the report, I'm like, you're not going to see that much movement on Yahoo earnings themselves because it's Alibaba that drives the price of Yahoo here now, especially once they spin off, you know, the rest of their legacy operations or sell the rest of their legacy operations to Verizon. I mean, Yahoo's kind of on its own, and Yahoo is kind of very married to Baba then. And if you look on any given day, Alibaba's down 2%, Yahoo's usually following suit. So it's hard for the stock to move on its own earnings report. That being said, give us the earnings now, Spencer.
Okay, I will do just that. Yahoo reported Q1 adjusted EPS 18 cents versus 14 cent estimate, sales of $1.327 billion versus 1.23, so they beat that number. They beat both numbers, actually. And look at the first two candles there from after the bell. Look at that. That's fun.
A little bit wild there, but then you come back and it's just settled right back in. I actually did make a couple trades on this Yahoo there, just fading the moves. It was kind of how I was approaching it because I just had that theory that Alibaba is the price driver here. So I don't think Yahoo earnings can really move the stock that much anymore. If they said something, you know, potential with the Verizon deal, I mean, there's a few points worth of Verizon in there. So, but, you know, there wasn't really much said there. So I believe they said closing. I thought they said June, but, you know, maybe I'm mistaken there. Yahoo, anyways, I think it just trades off the price of Baba. So if I'm trading Yahoo, I'm just looking at Baba.
And that's what I'm going to give you levels on. I'm just going to give you some daily levels in Alibaba. And, boy, this daily chart is looking juicy here at the 112 area. Yesterday's high was the high of the move at 112.20. But you can see in the last six sessions, we've struggled in the upper 111 handle. Also, we dealt with 112. This was back after the stock IPO'd back in December. After you topped out at 120, you really struggled at 111.68. So for you guys, you know, take a look. 112 potential breakout in Alibaba all-time high, 120 even.
Let's go to the big report from this morning here, Morgan Stanley, and it is actually trading up substantially in the pre-market. I'm kicking myself a little bit. I want to buy this going to the report. I don't know why. You know, you see a lot of stocks, you know, like we saw it happen 3-4 times where a stock, you know, bank stock reports. We saw it with Bank America. We saw it with Citigroup. We saw it with J.P. Morgan. We saw it with Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs was a disappointment. But we saw them, you know, basically bounce J.P. Morgan, Bank America, Citigroup on good reports and then sell them off. And Goldman Sachs, they just hit it hard. And then you start thinking, well, you know, Morgan Stanley, they're going to do the same thing here. And I know a lot of traders are coming in here this morning probably looking at it saying, man, they've, you know, bounced these other ones and they sold them right back off. I think they're going to do it again. I'm not so sure. I think it's a crowded trade to make that play here now. So I think a lot of traders have taken note of it here now. So I wouldn't be surprised Morgan Stanley actually holds on to some of these gains. What's the report, though, Spencer? We're doing all this analysis and we don't even know the numbers yet.
Well, Q1 EPS, $1 versus 88 cents. So they beat that by 12 cents. Sales, 9.7 bill versus 9.3. So a good report for the Q1.
And you know what else I noticed too? When Goldman was getting killed yesterday on their report, Morgan was holding on. It was holding up quite well. You know, pair traders probably were really banging their heads against the wall. And then the pair traders were probably, you know, maybe coming into this report short. And even last night after hours, it was trading down after hours, probably thinking, well, if Goldman, you know, disappoints, Morgan's bound to disappoint. Well, those traders are significantly underwater here today. If you were trying to pair trade Morgan versus Goldman yesterday and maybe took it home hoping for an earnings report windfall, you're getting hurt more. And short-term traders often, you know, that, you know, when you get them all on one side of the trade, it'll often go the other way. That's why I think Morgan Stanley might actually hold on to these gains today. Plus, you got a lot of the European banks trading up here this morning. The banks across the board are getting a little bit of a relief pop. I think Morgan holds on to the gains. Joel, you want to make a bet?
Yeah. Oh, well, first let me give you the, I know this is going to be a lot of negotiating on this one. I could feel it in my bones.
Negotiations Wednesday.
Okay. First of all, I'll give you the pre-market action. That pre-market high is 43.35.
No. Stop. 43.35?
Yes.
Much up there.
Well, 1,000 on the up and 120 on the down. So okay. You would have.
That wasn't very 43.35. Did we actively trade in the 42 handle? Because I didn't notice it trading that high.
It was just at 7 a.m., just a quick pop up there. So, no, okay. Majority of the action's been at the 42.50 level. Looking at the dailies here, a couple highs. Just under 42.50, so that's your first area of resistance. After that, I mean, nothing at 43. Just see something at 43.10. But let's get right down to it, Dennis. 41, 42 even, and you think this thing's just going to rally all day long. I will say it doesn't close above 42 and a quarter.
Well, I'm giving up the edge. It's at 42 right now. Why in the hell would I give you that? You got to give me where the thing is. I 42? Think it closes. Oh, well, 42 is offered right now. So you got to split it. 41.95 to 42. So you got to go 41.975. We'll even get to the sub pennies here for you. So at 41.97, you win. At 41.98, I win. 41.975 for a lunch. Now it just changed. So now you're gonna
let me think about this.
I wasn't looking at it for longer. Because so. I got him running scared with this crowded trade I'm talking about. I feel like it's crowded. I think there's some day traders short this thing, and I think they're going to eat it.
Yeah. All right. I mean, put it this way. I mean, I'd love to see a pullback to 41.60.
Okay, sorry.
I'm going to wait.
He's scared. I got him running scared here, folks. USB.
Nice one, Dennis. Nice one. You just ruined a whole bet.
I should have just taken the 42 and been done. I tried to get an extra little bet, and then I chased him away. What about USB? Did we get those numbers yet? US Bancorp?
Yeah, we did. Q1 EPS, 82 cents. That's a beat by 2 cents on that. Sales, 5.32 billion versus 5.29. So they beat on the top and the beat on the bottom.
Not trading up here, but 3,500 shares only. So we are very, very quiet here. And I'll tell you the other thing is that it's bid at 49.69. And it's the best offer is way up at 52.50. So even though it's traded some active volume here, 3,500 shares around 49.80, I don't know. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if this thing goes green.
Boy, you're so bullish, the banks today.
Bullish! Look at it, I'm back. I'm bullish.
I mean, look at this. I mean, this thing is just really taking a haircut since it hit $55, actually over $55. Big steady downtrend here. So I think you're going to find some sellers on the way up, but I wouldn't be stepping out. I call 51 major resistance if it goes into rally mode. You had three highs at the $51 area just a few days ago on the 11th, 12th, and 13th. Of this month coming back on the downside, man, you don't want to see this low of the move taken out at 49.68. The reason for that being is that matches a low that you had from December. So boom, boom, below 49.60, look out on this thing. Who cares about the report?
We got 30 seconds here. Johan Smith from the chat wants our thoughts on State Street, STT, so regional bank here. Stock, no trades this morning, but it is bid up at 78.02, so it is bid up 30 cents, like we said. Banks look like they're going to have a pretty strong day here today, at least at the open. They're all looking up here in the pre-market, so looks like your driver that's driving the market up is the bank. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's tacked on a percent, at least at the open.
Yeah, it looks like buyers really stepped up to $77 level, the area of the last two lows, and also some two lows just above that. So if I was holding on for a swing trade, wouldn't want to see that 77 breached. On the upside, once we get through yesterday's high at 78.19, we have some room up to the upper $78 handle. Two-day high, 78.85.
Also, a big block trade yesterday at around 308 at the 77.68 level, 223,000 shares about in STT, so notable there. All right, 8:15 now. We're going to grab our first guest of the day. That's David Kudla, CEO of Mainstay Capital Management right here in Michigan. We'll be right back with Mr. Kudla. Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. We're on the line now with Dave Kudla, CEO of Mainstay Capital Management. Dave, how's it going today?
Good morning, guys. Great.
Great. Thanks for coming on with us. You always send us some pretty in-depth notes prior to you coming on our show, so I wanted to just jump right in and get your thoughts on the overall market here. I guess you say we're in a bit of a Trump slump. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, it's interesting what's happened over the past several months. You know, we had the Trump rally coming off the election, bond yield spiking, bonds going down, stocks doing the opposite of what everyone or what many expected in rallying very nicely. What we've seen now in the first 3.5 months of the year is, it's been referred to as the Trump slump, where those Trump trades have reversed. We're watching some of the bank earnings this morning. Banks have suffered here in the first few months of the year. We've also seen some of the other Trump type trades that haven't done as well. And we have seen bond yields come down. A month ago, we were above 2.6% on the 10-year, and yesterday down below 2.2, almost a 0.5% decrease in the yield on the 10-year. So this reflation trade, the Trump trade, it looks like a lot of the air has come out of it. And so we're at we think, a pivotal point in the markets.
Let's move on to Q1 earnings season here. Growth is expected to come in at 9 or 10%. That'd be the strongest quarter in more than 5 years. What you've seen so far, I mean, you know, earnings move the markets. Are expectations a little bit too high, or what are you looking for in the upcoming earnings season?
I don't think so. And in the earnings so far, we've only seen about 10% of S&P 500 earnings come in so far. This is a big week. We're getting some good news this morning on some of the pre-market earnings announcements. And we've had good news so far this season with about a tenth of S&P 500 companies reporting. We're actually at 14% earnings growth versus that 9 to 10% where we expect to come in. Now, certainly we've got some poor earnings reports to come, and we'll probably see that number come down. But so far, looking very well. And earnings are very important right now. There's been so much talk about, you know, there's been what the Fed has done over the past several years. More recently, we had soft economic data that looked good. Now we have some hard economic data with the CPI number and concerns over first quarter GDP that are coming in softer. So earnings, after this earnings trough that we went through in the latter half of 15 and the first half of 16 of 5 quarters of negative earnings growth, we've now had earnings growth in the fourth quarter. We are going to have strong earnings growth this quarter, and that is critical for this market, which is richly valued, to be able to move forward.
Oh, we have to talk interest rates here. Since the last Fed meeting, I mean, you've had the TLT going straight up here, kind of dogging the Fed here. What's your outlook for interest rates here for the remainder of the year? It's almost like the market's like being a little tepid. Maybe the economy's not strong enough for, you know, two or three interest rate increases over the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of concern coming into that. First of all, the forecast by the Fed, you know, we didn't think that there was going to be many, including us, didn't think we'd get a March rate hike until about a week and a half before, and then Fed fund futures priced it in 100%. Then the forecast was maybe we'll get three rate hikes instead of only two in 2017. Now we're looking at the data we've had here more recently, wondering if we even get a June rate hike, or wondering if we even get two rate hikes in the remainder of the year. You know, this, I think, has caught a lot of people by surprise with yields coming down this far. Overnight, the JGBs, the 10-year bond in Japan, fell all the way back down to a 0% yield. Hasn't been that low since November, since before the election. So we're seeing those yields come down everywhere. But it's called into question, the whole reflation trade, rates going higher through the rest of the year. Now, we think that, you know, this is what we see. We see this volatility in rates. We think rates do move higher. We'll finish the year quite a bit higher than where yields are today. But it's called into a question this more aggressive pace that some were expecting out of the Fed and what the Fed was forecasting.
All right. With valuations getting a little rich here, are you looking over the pond in Europe to do any investing?
Absolutely. Looking over the pond to Europe and also to emerging markets. You know, when we look at where the U.S. market has come, and it's good we're seeing the earnings coming through this quarter. We expect a good earnings quarter. We need that for the PE part of the equation for valuations in the U.S. But we're richly valued here. We're at a CAPE ratio, cyclically adjusted price to earnings ratio, of about 30 in the U.S. That's down around in the teens in Europe and in emerging markets at 13. So when we look overseas, we do see more attractive markets in terms of valuations. And we think it's time for investors to be, if they haven't already, to be looking overseas at emerging markets, to be looking at Europe. Some political uncertainty there as we speak, but some opportunity, certainly in 2017.
No worries or trepidations. I mean, Trump policies, Buy America. You don't think that this is going to have a negative impact on, some of these emerging economies as far as trade goes?
Well, we thought of that, right? A lot of people thought that coming out of the election, we saw emerging markets sell off quite a bit in those first 2 months after the election. But if you look at what we've seen out of Trump, we've seen a moderation of a lot of policies. Most recently, a moderation on calling China a currency manipulator. He said he'd do it on day one of his administration. He's now, after his meeting with the prime minister, he's now come out and said he's not going to do it at all. On NAFTA, we were going to renegotiate NAFTA. Okay, a few weeks ago, said they look for only small changes. So we're seeing a moderation in those policies that we thought would have such an adverse impact on those that export to us. And because of that, you know, we saw emerging markets rally 12-13% in the first quarter and continue to do well here in the second quarter. So we think that it makes sense, even in the face of that uncertainty over what Trump's policy might be. We've seen a moderation on it, so some of that fears come out. And when we look at valuations abroad, we think the dollar remains strong, but not strengthened a lot more. So we have the currency will be okay. And our currency exchange rate, we think that looking overseas to Europe and emerging markets makes a lot of sense for U.S. investors right now because our market has just become so richly valued.
Talk about richly valued stocks. What a run we've had in the technology sector, taking over the top components in the S&P 500. Is it too late to get in on the rally on the tech sector, specifically talking ETF XLK?
I don't think so. Technology has had a good run in the first part of the year. And, you know, when we look overall at broadly at technology, we had in 2016, basically capital spending was about flat with companies. We now expect that to grow 4%. We expect the CapEx cycle to continue to improve. And with that, we see a lot of technology spending. So we think that with that in store, still for the technology sector overall, some of the big tech names, what they've been doing, and we think will continue their leadership. We think technology will be a top sector for investors to own in 2017.
Always want to see strength in the housing sector. I'm looking at ITB, the U.S. Home Construction ETF. You need a strong housing market for a strong economy. What's your outlook for the ITB?
We like ITB as well. iShares U.S. Home Construction owns home builders focused on U.S. residential construction. We're in a cycle now. Many people can just look anecdotally in their neighborhood, in their town, in their state, what's going on. When we look at the numbers overall, again, we see some volatility in permits, new home builds, existing home sales, but we've seen a continued expansion. And, you know, we think that U.S. home construction, specifically that ETF, ITB, continues to be a good holding for investors.
Crude oil, big determinant of the market, not as big in the S&P 500 as it was. What's your outlook for crude oil? Seem to be stuck in a $50 handle after that little dip to the upper 40s.
Well, you know, well, it's interesting. We had the OPEC deal right at the end of the year, beginning of the year, the OPEC, non-OPEC deal to cut production in OPEC and non-OPEC countries. We've seen rig counts, though, in the U.S. ramping up since last May, going up every month and over the past several weeks. That U.S. production coming online, we've seen oil go nowhere. Their goal was price stability. We had analyst expectations of oil rising into the 60s in the first quarter. We didn't see it. They're calling for that now again by the end of the year. The reality of it is OPEC doesn't control prices anymore. They're more of an industry group than a cartel these days. They really can't hold their members accountable, and we know there's plenty of cheating on those quotas, but it's also about the U.S. now. We're a leading producer of oil with shale oil, hydraulic fracturing, all the things that we're doing now with production and efficiencies that continue to improve. We're now seeing, shale oil wells that can produce oil break-even points as low as $10 or $15 or $20 a barrel, a lot lower than where it was just a few years ago. And we're getting more oil out of every well. So we think that oil stays in the 50s. Can we see it pop to 60 or a little bit higher on a supply disruption or some other issue? Probably. But, you know, the days of $100 oil that we had as recently as a few years ago are gone for a very, very long time. And we think that oil stays here with a 50 handle plus or minus for quite a long time.
All right. So we've been following script and I've given you the easy questions here. And now I'm going to go to the tough ones. What about these autos? I know you're located in Grand Blanc, Michigan. Followed GM and Ford very closely. GM, nothing but earnings beats. Stock can't get off the mat here. Ford did pre-announce. I mean, there is some dividend yield here. Please give us your outlook for GM and Ford.
Well, we're at the point of what's referred to as peak auto, and that is a peak in our traditional auto cycle. Cyclical companies follow the economy. We've had a tremendous cycle from the lows back in 08 and 09 when two of the big three in the U.S. filed bankruptcy. We've seen exceptional run. We're still looking at 17.5 to 17.7 in U.S. vehicle sales this year, which keeps us on that plateau with a little bit of rolling over. And that's the concern, really. Ford and GM doing very well in China, continuing to grow their sales there. GM, for many years now, sells more cars in China than it does in the U.S. these days. Thing is when we look at those, specifically those companies, their break-even point is a lot lower than it was 10 years ago. They can make a lot of money at 17 million vehicles, 16 million vehicles. But stocks are discounting the future, and the concern is that we're at peak auto and the cycle's starting to roll over. An interesting thing that happened recently with Tesla passing Ford in market cap and for a period of time passing GM in market cap. Here we have a company that only made less than 100,000 cars last year that has a market cap higher than a company like GM that made over 5 million worldwide, which is interesting. But, you know, when we look at the dividend yield for those stocks, there's a reason to own them for dividend yield alone. The key, though, is when we look forward is where are we in the auto cycle? We know we're at peak. As long as we're at that plateau, GM, Ford, they can make a lot of money. It's a matter of when they roll over, and we think that's coming.
All right, I'm in the market for a new car, so I'm going to single-handedly bring this market up, just me. Dave Kula, he's the CEO of Mainstay Capital Management. He's from Michigan. Dave, we always love having you on. Thanks so much for giving us the time, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
All right, 8:32 now. Dennis, can we get a quick imbalance look before our next
guest? Let's see what's jumping out at me here. They're all pretty small. Colgate, 115,000 to sell. This is going to be one of those days where if they're buying the banks, you know, yield is up, you can look at the TLT as getting the beat. So you got to think automatically, maybe some of your defensive stocks are going to take a hit here today. And that's the way it's been working here as of late, with the banks trading up as much as they are. And that is pretty substantial here this morning. I'm seeing Goldman up over percent. Obviously, Morgan leading the way up 2% on their good earnings report. But I wouldn't be surprised, you know, you got the XLU trading down 0.4% here in the pre-market. So you're going to see some pressures from utilities, some of your defensive names there, like with the yield plays. So this is your classic risk on open anyways. That's what we're looking at, is more of a risk on open. So not surprising to see a sell and balance in some of your defensive names, like a Colgate. Procter & Gamble, one to keep an eye on here. It's got a buy and balance right now, but it did go ex-dividend here today, and actually Colgate did too. CL, 40 cents. Procter & Gamble, 69 cents. So there is an adjusted close on Procter & Gamble of $90.11. So if you're trading that one, that's your adjusted close. General Motors, we were just talking about that. It's got 44,000 shares to buy here, so GM with a small buy-in balance. It's just kind of stabilized. Ford has still trying to find the bottom there. Full disclosure, I do have Ford in my invest portfolio for the same reason our guest just talked about. I like the dividend, but that hasn't been working that well because stock keeps leaking. Twitter, 29,000 to sell. Other than that, they're pretty small, Spencer.
All right, let's get one more earnings report in here. Let's go to Abbott Labs.
ABT, how'd we do?
ABT reported yesterday after the bell, right? It was this morning. Q1 adjusted EPS of 48 cents versus a 43 cent estimate. So they beat that by 5 cents. Sales of $6.3 billion versus $6.15. So they beat that number as well. As far as the fiscal year 17 EPS outlook, coming in at $2.40 to $2.50. That's right in line with the $2.45 estimate.
It's a nice lift for Abbott here in the pre-market. Just looking at the buck, 44 is 8,500 shares, 44.5, 45. I bet there's some size up at 45. I don't know why I'm thinking that. I can't see that far on the buck because it only shows you so many levels. But I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you see some size of 45, which puts me to the bogey here. The stock did just tick an odd lot of 44.99 in the pre-market. I wouldn't be surprised if you run into trouble here in the upper 44s.
Oh, I think you're gonna have problems even getting up to
Maybe even 344.
Yeah, well, you know what I would do? I mean, on this one, I'd maybe, you know, throw something in, you know, just under 44 here, clearing a double top. So if, you know, enough stock
get above there.
Yeah, to keep it down. 44. Now I know we're trading 44.20 here pre
light volume.
Yeah, light volume. So
and it's leaking a bit.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's going to open over 44.
Yep, I think so too. And
44 is the bogey. That's the number. Opens
there
over.
You go.
Maybe can make a run to 44.5, but I'm not jumping in here with two hands here with the stock trading up 2% on a risk on morning, because sometimes your pharmaceutical stocks sometimes will actually move opposite to the market. They're kind of their own animal. Sometimes they go with the market. Sometimes they go opposite the market. I mean, this is an earnings report. This is kind of going to be its own animal, probably not influenced by the S&P really whatsoever here this morning. So Abbott Labs, I'm going to sit back and watch what happens at 44.
All right, 8:36 now. We're going to take our second and final break of the day. We're going to grab Paul Yuke. He's the co-founder of LifeSight Index Partners and the PM of the BioShares ETFs, BBC and BBP. So we'll be right back with Paul. All right, welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick, and we're on the line now with Paul Yuke. He's the co-founder of LifeSight Index Partners and the PM of the BioShares ETFs, BBC and BBP. Paul, how's it going today?
Going really well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Paul, first I just want to get into, you know, looking at the overall markets, looking at the biotech sector. I mean, a lot of things you have to take into account when, you know, policies and whatnot. But We've had some geopolitical events going on. Does that affect your thinking at all on the biotech sector?
Yeah, I mean, let's just get the lay of the land here. 2016, last year, was fairly devastating for biotech. And if you look at the NASDAQ biotech index, it was down, I think, 22% last year, one of the worst years in record since the founding of the sector, right? So 2017 has been really a breath of fresh air. And in fact, Q1, in the first quarter of this year, one of our funds, our BBC Clinical Trials Fund, was, I think, Bloomberg ETF reporter Eric Belchunas said it was the number one performing equity ETF of something like 1,000 equity ETFs in the U.S. markets. It was up nearly 30%. And so investors are coming back. I think a lot of that, honestly, was a relief rally because fund inflows, we track that fairly closely. There's about $50 billion in biotech mutual funds and ETFs have been flat for the year. So a lot of that has probably been a little bit of short covering and just stocks moving upward simply because Hillary did not become president. So what's happened since March 31st? The sector has declined a little bit. I think some of that is just giving back major gains. But, you had other issues weighing on it. You certainly had the fact that Trump has tried to pass this healthcare plan, which ultimately failed. You have North Korea going a little bit crazy. And then, you had some bank earnings, Goldman, yesterday, which were very disappointing. So I think those are the kind of things that have weighed on biotech. But it really is business as usual in healthcare and in biotech.
Now, you touched on Trump and potential policies here. Are there any areas of the biotech sector you think are more susceptible to change in policies than others, and other ones that may get a boost if his policies go into effect?
Yeah, I mean, what he really is focused on is what's very populist right now, which is to focus on, what I would say, some of these specialty pharmaceutical products, as well as drugs, older drugs that are very highly priced. So, that's a situation where if you're a company, let's pick on a company like Biogen, which has a fairly aging portfolio of drugs, of these biologic drugs, for things like multiple sclerosis, which have list prices of nearly $70,000 a year, yet these drugs have been out for, close to two decades. There can be pressure there. There could be biogeneric, there can be price negotiation on behalf of the government. So I think those are the companies and those are the products at risk. I think the very innovative new life-saving drugs that are coming out are going to be relatively insulated. And I'm going to point to three very recent examples of new drugs that were announced. So Regeneron announced or it recently had a drug approved called dupilumab for eczema, which is a skin rash. And that drug was priced very reasonably. In fact, a lot of the HMOs and payers came out to say that Regeneron did a good job pricing that drug. And then equally, there's another company, Genentech or Roche, announced an MS drug called Ocrevus, which competes really with Biogen, and that was priced kind of at a discount to some of the existing older drugs on the market, which was pretty remarkable. And again, the payers and providers came out and said great things about that. And then most recently, Teva announced got approval for a drug for Huntington's disease, again, a fairly low-priced drug, lower than analysts were expecting. So three recent examples of drug prices being set lower than expected post-FDA approval, and I think that's very positive for kind of the future of policy.
Pretty ugly looking chart here. Inteva making a new low of the move. Mylan had that pop up to the $46 area. That's back in the doldrums here. Any thoughts on Teva or Mylan?
Yeah, this whole sector of really of generics and specialty pharma is really the whole group has been in a lot of trouble. The problem with these companies is they have such major debt loads. Let's take Teva. You're talking about a company that has nearly six times debt to EBITDA. It's a very difficult load to sustain. And so, I think that investors are looking at and figuring out what they can sell. Valeant is really the epitome of this phenomenon. They've got over $30 billion of debt. they've been publicly saying they're trying to sell assets. They're not able to sell them at the price that they want, and so it's a little bit of a death spiral on the equity. And so if you look at these companies like Mylan, Teva, Valiant, they're all kind of facing the same financial structure, which is which is very different from their business.
Hey, Paul, a few weeks ago we had Adam Feuerstein on the show, the reporter from thestreet.com, and we were talking about price manipulation in these small cap biotechs, right, and how these companies will often use a less than legitimate rally as an opportunity to issue new stock and raise money for the company and kind of leave retail investors and traders holding the bag off these rallies that they know don't accurately represent the true value of the stock. I'm wondering if this is something that you've observed and sort of how you handle that in your analysis.
Yeah, and so I wear a few different hats. I've been in the investment banking world as a banker. In fact, one of our affiliated units, LifeSci Capital, is a FINRA registered broker dealer, and I do work with LifeSci Capital as well. So we are actively engaged in fundraising for both public and private companies. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I think the first thing to say is when a stock price does spike after data or after some good news, it's generally good corporate finance for emerging biotech companies to raise money. It's just you never know when you can raise money, when the window is open. So the general advice that we and really other banks would give is when your stock is up and there's demand, sell. And I think people know that. And Adam Feuerstein has a tremendous following. He's really very insightful in the biotech sector. And I think that retail investors today are extremely smart with really great resources available to them, like Benzinga, like Adam Feuerstein. So let's give them credit. Retail folks, retail biotech investors know that a deal may very well be coming when stocks go up. I mean, you follow Twitter, you see it. News comes up, you see people say, I wonder when the deal's coming, I wonder when the deal's coming. So I don't think that management is any more clever, quite honestly, than retail in these situations. I think it's a little bit of a game. Traders buy the news, they know it's coming, some people short. It's a very efficient market, I do believe.
All right, question from our chat now. Opinion from you on Gilead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Gilead... Gilead's one of these value traps, right? It's people have been waiting forever for this magical M&A transaction to transform the company while they have this massively declining Hep C portfolio. The great thing that Gilead did is they cured Hep C effectively. Just this horrible disease before they launched Sovaldi, and now they're able to knock that disease down to a viral load of close to zero. The problem from a stock perspective is how do you replace $20 billion of sales when it's declining 25 or 30% year over year? And the treatable population is shrinking because you're treating them. And so what bulls have said is, look, these guys have $30 billion of cash. They're going to do some M&A. And I just don't believe that you can do M&A to create value to the extent that value is being lost by their incredibly shrinking, $20 billion drug portfolio in Hep C. So it's not my favorite stock. It's a value trap. Everyone looks at it and says, my gosh, look at that 6x PE. Look at that free cash flow yield. But I just, I don't see any reason to get excited about. So it's not a stock that we love. It is in our BBP fund. I don't think you get tremendously damaged by it, but it's a little bit of a slow decliner over time, in my belief.
Spinner is thinking along my lines here. Thoughts on Sarepta? Had that major run after the drug approval, gave it all back. Now it's back to the area. The only thing that I was thinking about with when that got approved and had that tremendous run was, how many people have this disease? How widespread is it going to be? And how after the insurance companies to cover that big cost? Thoughts on Sarepta?
Yeah, so Sarepta, obviously, as one of the most controversial FDA drug approvals in biotech history, probably the most controversial, and a lot of people, a lot of scientists, a lot of practitioners believe that the drug should not have been approved because there was no scientific evidence that proves that it's effective. And so very, very few patient data. At this point, the drug is approved. What we are looking for is sales. The problem here is, you know, what you said is correct. It's a relatively small population, and there's a lot of competition. There are a lot of other agents that may have more effective approaches. There's one private company that people are very closely following called Solid GT. There you have a gene therapy approach that seems to be knocking the disease down pretty effectively in earlier studies. So, you know, it's the market is small. Not sure how much time they're going to have all by themselves. So I think that's Sarepta's primary issue.
All right, last two, Paul, and then we'll let you get out of here. Can you get some short and long-term thoughts first on EDIT?
Editas you're talking about.
Yeah, yep.
Editas, the CRISPR company? Yeah. So they had some major positive news from the court system that they, you know, basically they have this IP following eukaryotic cells or, you know, as differentiated from bacterial type cells. And bottom line is, if you look at the three or four followed companies in the CRISPR landscape, they seem to have the best position now as they're partnered with the Broad or Harvard. You know, the jury is out on Editas. It is incredibly, incredibly early. It's really preclinical. We don't own it in our BBC fund simply because we only own biotech companies after they have advanced drug into human clinical trials, into at least phase one. This is important because a ton of work is done in the lab and in animals to at least get a drug to a certain level of safety that the FDA will allow you to even test it into a human. Now, if you look at Editas, so much of all the valuation is based on future, $800 million of valuation based on what could we do in the future. Can we program our kids to have blue eyes? Can we program our kids to be great basketball players? And it's a lot of story. It's a lot of hype. I want to see evidence of actual drugs. The landscape's going to be a lot bigger than expected. There's an interesting Korean company called Toolgen out there that people probably don't know that has some very early publications and some very early potential IP. So I think that if you do want to buy Editas, you just continue to have to buy the group, and the group, you know, including CRISPR and Caribou and Toolgen and some of these others. I'm uncomfortable buying one individual name in the space.
Okay, this is the last one I want to go. Can you comment on M&A in the sector? Any specific companies you see most vulnerable or least vulnerable to M&A, or what you see coming next?
Vulnerable. I mean, I think vulnerable is probably not the word I use because a lot of these companies want to be bought. You know, it's probably been a bit of a slow year. We obviously had some very large transactions in the first quarter. Ariad was bought for something like $10 billion, cancer company. Colucid, a migraine pill, bought for $1 billion. It's happening. It's picking up. The business development activity at big pharma companies is high. The Japanese pharma companies are very active. So, you know, a couple stocks in the news. Flexion has been in the news. Sanofi is out there talking about, you know, unsubstantiated, but seem to be very, very good, high-quality rumors that they're in discussions. And so I would not expect Flexion to be a public company for much longer, FLXN. Another one that's pretty interesting that people talk about, MDCO Medicines Company. Also very interesting, they recently just brought on a board member who was the CEO of Ariad, which was acquired this year. And so, you know, that's a longer term process. So you typically don't hire a board member and then turn around and sell the company a day later. But I'd say within the next year or something like that, you could probably see a ton of interest develop for a company like Medicines, given they just announced unbelievable data for their PCSK9 therapy for cholesterol lowering.
All right, we've been on the line with Paul Yuk, co-founder of LifeSci Index Partners and the PM of the BioShares ETFs, tickers BBC and BBP. Paul, thanks so much, as always, for coming on and sharing your thoughts. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, anytime. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
You too, Paul. All right, 8:53 now, 7 more minutes. There was one news item we didn't get to that I kind of wanted to get to a lot earlier in the show when we were talking about Yahoo, and that was this Verizon news from yesterday. The Verizon CEO was talking to a Bloomberg reporter and said he's open. Let me get the exact words he said. He said, open to merger talks with Comcast, Disney, or CBS, which kind of blew me away because that would be a very, very, very large deal. And obviously, AT&T just did the takeover of Time Warner. So that's in play. But I saw those Verizon comments, and I actually took a step back because that's big. And look what it did after the, that was right before they closed today, and look what the stock did. So the market thought so too.
Yeah, well, the stocks popped, initially there. You can see the big pop in Comcast. You can see a little pop there in Disney, too. Disney actually popped almost a dollar on that, just those comments there. And Verizon popped up as well. So, they all popped up. But I don't know if I see a mega merger here coming or not. So he says he's open to it. It doesn't mean there's discussions. It doesn't mean anything like that. He's open to, like...
But it is the most clear he's been. Normally, the CEOs don't even go that far in acknowledging.
Right. True. They don't usually show their hand at all. So, those comments coming from a CEO are surprising, to say the least. I'm just not sure there's something, that's potentially going to come from this. But the market did pop Verizon initially. I'll limit my, analysis here, though, because I do have positions on, short-term positions on in Comcast and Verizon. So I'll limit my comments. Joel, what do you think?
Dennis is short Verizon at the 49.40 area.
so he says, but
Morgan Stanley up a buck.
You're not that far off.
I just don't know. I really don't know what to make of this. Obviously, when there's these kind of things circulating, being short is not the greatest recommendation. If you've had a long in these stocks and you're getting near a target, I would take that off above. If it could clear 49.50, things open up. I see a trio of highs just under $50. So, man, I just, I don't know who's buying who, what kind of premium they're paying here. AT&T, buying.
Nobody's buying anybody.
Yeah, it's a lot of talk.
This was a comment. So, it's people jumping to conclusions here if they think there's something's imminent between Disney and Verizon. I don't think so. It's a comment out there. Maybe something materializes later on. We know Verizon, and this whole straight path deal, where is straight path here now? It hasn't been announced yet, but we know that, that's where, the little M&A started when AT&T bought straight path for the crazy premium. And now, it's been, rumored that Verizon's going to trump their bid. I don't think we've actually seen Verizon come out with an actual bid here yet, but straight path is trading up at 113. Here now, which is $35. So smaller acquisitions and stuff, but do I see a mega merger here, between the telecom, and talking some of the major media companies here? I don't know if I see that happening, in my opinion.
All right. Let's did we get all our earnings done for today?
We got the bulk of the earnings. Just a preview here. So we're going to get Qualcomm. We're going to get eBay. We're going to get American Express here after the bell. So we're going to get a few big companies here. We didn't get a chance to get to ratings either. Coca-Cola is catching an upgrade here at Credit Suisse this morning. Also, Goldman Sachs is catching an upgrade at Citigroup here. Maybe that's just one after the report. Maybe they thought it was a little bit overdone. Probably a valuation call. I didn't read the actual report there. And Hewlett Packard HPQ is getting upgraded to overweight at Barclays. So there's a few. Anything else jumping out at you, Spencer, that you wanted to highlight from ratings land?
No, those are the only ones there that jumped out to me, the ones that you mentioned. I always think it's interesting when a bank upgrades a bank, which Citi did today with...
It's more interesting when they downgrade their competitor.
Yeah, yeah.
When Goldman downgrades Morgan.
Yeah. But right, nothing else. Nothing else that jumps out to me as far as
What the craziest one we ever saw though, Joel, was when BMO. Remember this like years ago, and I don't even know how the heck this happened. But BMO, which is a Canadian bank, upgraded like their BMO Capital. Like I was like, are they upgrading themselves? I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. That was like 5 years ago. I don't even know if it was accurate or not, but it was on the ratings changes. And I was like, is this right? Can you upgrade yourself?
I actually have one more. SunTrust came out with a note today on the on the phone stocks, phone companies. They said to buy T-Mobile and hold everyone else. So Sprint, AT&T, and Dish 2 were all initiated at a hold, but T-Mobile got a buy, and so did Charter Communications. So
T-Mobile and Charter both are trading up slightly here in the pre-market. T-Mobile is just an odd lot here. Actually, you can look at the pre-market volume. See, whoa, it's already trading 134,000 shares. Actually, it was across 134,000 shares of that was across. You've only had 10 shares trade at 65.14. So it is bid at 64.70. So it is bid up. Charter, which is CHTR, hasn't traded either. You'll see the pre-market volume, 43,000. Again, that's across from overnight here because that was off exchange. So there hasn't been any trades on either of these stocks really today yet.
Just a quick comment here. Goldman Sachs really took a beating yesterday. A lot of people underwater since the stock peaked in March and then looked like it was trying to put a low in right before the report. I'm not jumping out and buying this on this upgrade here. Pre-market high is 217.13. If I had to buy or looking to buy the stock, I'd like to see it protect that low from yesterday at 13.18, maybe put a low in and a upper 14 handle, at least have a double bottom to lean on. And final comments on Coca-Cola. Man, this thing has quietly marched its way back up to the almost $48 or $44.
Right. Yep.
Trading at 43.77, broke out yesterday. I think I would really maybe try and stay away from the open, but if I could buy this thing in the 43.50 handle, a little gap fill, and then check for size at 44.
Just wanted stock from the chat there just before we let you go. We've got there's a couple stocks in the chat here, but we'll try to get to a couple of them. Downward Dog wants to know about NUE. NUE here, this is one that I actually have in my invest portfolio. I've had it in there for about a decade, and it's kind of there. It's been paying me 2.5%. I bought it in, I think, around $50, and I'm going back a long time ago, and it got the big pop off the big Trump bump when it got up just, you know, if we look there, just towards the end of the year, it got up actually to $68, and I'm kicking myself multiple times, trade up at 65, and I was like, I should ring the register on that. Been sitting on it a long time, but I don't have a lot of exposure to steel. And I was like, I kind of like the exposure. So, and I do believe NUE is one of best of breed when you're talking steel. So I like the company. I still got it in my invest portfolio. I like it and paid for it. But, you know, it's slowly coming out of favor here.
Low of the move yesterday. So if you're counting on a rally, you want to see that hold trading a little bit in the green. Low of the move from yesterday at 56.40. We'll see. I do see yesterday's high. If you clear that at 766, things open up into the $58 handle, 58.44.
Alrighty, that is our show for the day. Hope you enjoyed our chats with David and Paul. Please remember that all the information, material, and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. If you missed any part of the show, you can catch it again. It's on YouTube right now. You can just rewind it, or you can catch the podcast when it's uploaded in about an hour to iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Thanks for joining in today. On tomorrow, it is 4:20, so we're going to have Alan Brockstein, our marijuana expert, on the line to talk about some of his favorite marijuana stocks, and also we're going to be joined by Tim Anderson from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. That's on the docket for Thursday's show. That's it for us. Have a good rest of your day, everyone. We'll be back with you folks tomorrow morning.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.